Welcome to the Hardwood Handicappers Podcast.
They're a bunch of guys who ain't never played the game, and they never got the girls in high school, and they just want to get in the game.
With your host, Jonathan Von Tobel.
See, the thing is, you guys look at me, you see the backwards hat, the gray socks, the funky outfit, and you say, now this guy's a chump, am I right?
No, f***ing geek. I'm a f***ing geek.
Only on the VSiN Podcast Network.
What's up and welcome in another edition of Hardwood Handicappers. I am fired up. Man, just like that, it goes by so quick, huh? I'm not talking about life, by the way. It's something I think all the time, too. Let's get a little dark very quickly right off the bat. My son just grows up so fast. It's all downhill after you're 21. No. We're talking about the NBA postseason, right? It all goes so quick, man. As of this recording, right, it's Friday. And we only have one series that has yet to be set in the second round. Philadelphia 76ers are going to take on the Atlanta Hawks. The Brooklyn Nets are going to take on the Milwaukee Bucks. Recording this early Friday, late Thursday. We're going to talk with Doug Kazarian and coming up in a couple of minutes. Just after the Suns have taken out the Los Angeles Lakers. So the Suns will take on the Denver Nuggets and the Utah Jazz sit back and await their opponent in the second round. But we already have three of the four series set that we will see in the conference semifinals. Man, just like that. Goes so freaking quick. So recorded Doug a little bit earlier. You're going to hear the conversation. It's right when the Lakers-Suns games started. So we're not going to get any analysis from Doug on what just transpired. But holy crap, what a performance. Devin Booker, 47 points as the Suns eliminate the Los Angeles Lakers in six games. Last night, Booker, 50 of 22, 8 of 10 from three-point range, had a plus 10, one of the better plus-minuses outside of a lot of the bench guys later in the contest, but 47 points on 15 of 22 shooting. Absolutely unreal. Contributed 11 rebounds as well. A fantastic breakout performance there from Devin Booker. I shouldn't even call it a breakout performance. He was absolutely incredible in this series. Was an awesome, legitimate scorer for Phoenix multiple times in this series. And it's really, these are the cool parts about it, right? He scored, 77 points in the last two games. Had four 30-point games in this series. He was electric. And it is always cool to see young guys like this have their finally have their series in front of everybody, right? We're seeing it early in Trae Young and Luka Doncic's career. But Devin Booker's been a good player for a really long time. He's still very young. But we've been sitting and watching this kid for the last, 6 years now, drafted in 2015. Knowing how good he really could be, and then paired up with Chris Paul, seeing what the Suns have done, and seeing what he's able to do on a really big stage. Fantastic performance from Devin Booker and the Phoenix Suns, who move on in a series that I thought the Lakers would win in six. I thought it was going to be one of those where the matchup worked in favor of the Los Angeles Lakers. Felt good after three games, but this is a really big lesson in, I think at least, when it comes to managing bankroll and finding yourself opportunities. So I was involved in a lot of these series before they had started. But this Lakers series was one that Phoenix was playing extremely well, but this Lakers offense wasn't performing very well. So after game one, I bet them at even money to win the series, the Los Angeles Lakers. They take a 2-1 series lead, and after the 2-1 series lead, looking at the Suns at about plus 625, put a little on that to at least make the wager back, and a little bit of profit just in case the doomsday scenario happened. And sure enough, the doomsday scenario happens. But it's the same thing right across the board. The Denver series locked in a small profit just in case. And maybe I should be a little bit more selfish. In some of the series I was, the Atlanta Hawks series, I bet the Hawks was more and more confident as those games went by. Didn't really get off of any of it. But, you know, guaranteeing a profit sometimes being cautious, right, is a good thing. Did it with the Nuggets, did it with the Lakers, and you could probably continue to do this and find the way these series prices swing. Like, Doug's going to mention it when we talk to him coming up in a couple of minutes. But the way these series prices swing just wildly throughout a series after some of these games, there's always an opportunity to lock in some sort of profit in a lot of these series. So the Phoenix Suns are going to move on. They will face the Denver Nuggets, who beat the Portland Trail Blazers on Thursday night, 126-115. Now, this was a really interesting series, man. A really interesting series. The Denver Nuggets finished with an offensive rating of 125, the second best offensive rating in the NBA postseason up to this point. But I was really surprised that for the second consecutive year, the market at every turn was against the Denver Nuggets, right? We can go back to the beginning of the series where Portland closed as high as, I think, minus 140 in some markets to win this thing. And they win game one, but then Denver wins two straight. But at every turn, and what I mean by that is Denver was never favored by more than two on their own home court in any of those games. With home court accounted for, which it has been in all these series, Portland power rated as the better team, right? Power rated higher by the market. Before the series starts, they close as a $1.40 favorite. When the series is tied 2-2, going back to Denver, who has home court, Portland favored by about $1.30, $1.35. Game 6, market moves from Portland minus 4 to Portland minus 5. Like at every turn, there was movement against this Denver Nuggets team. It was insane. And I could understand some healthy skepticism of the Denver Nuggets, but I thought it was really interesting because there was a... It was like last year with Portland, right? And I guess dynamic backcourt play and point guard play will allow... I shouldn't even say allow. Will cause a majority maybe to overlook the flaws of a team, but it was just like last year where they go into the seeding games. Damian Lillard goes nuts in the bubble. He pulls them to the postseason. They beat the Memphis Grizzlies in the play-in game, and there's a lot of conversation around, hey, this team could beat the Los Angeles Lakers. Better watch out. And it was ignored that even though they had an offensive rating of nearly 125 in their bubble games, they were only outscoring opponents by 2.3 or 4 points per 100 possessions because their defense was so bad. And again, in this matchup, you have a front court that wasn't very good. You have a defensive rating that was 29th in the NBA in the regular season. And yet at every turn, there was no belief in this Denver Nuggets squad. And I hope this probably does totally come off as, I was right. It really isn't. Like, I am fascinated by perception at times, right? The whole thing with the New York Knicks, too, right? And it wasn't even the market, because the market wasn't that strong. The market, it looked like, caught on relatively quickly that the Hawks were the better team. But, like, the, was it 14 of 16 writers at ESPN? I mentioned it with Doug, picking the New York Knicks. Like, there was a lot of support for the Knicks before the series started. But it's perception, it seemed to be, right? The perception about the New York Knicks and their defense and the grit and the grind and playoff experience and all these things. I just thought it was, again, this isn't to, like, pat myself on the back with this Nuggets Trailblazer series. I was just really interested that you saw a lot of results that indicated this series is a lot closer than you think it is, and yet the market just refusing to budge on the Portland Trailblazers are the better team. I was really surprised, and good for Denver. It is going to be a fascinating matchup for them in the next round, because now, as we look ahead, they get done with a team in Portland that had a massive matchup advantage in the backcourt, and they get another team who is going to have a massive matchup advantage in the backcourt in the Phoenix Suns. So you go from having to deal with Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, and Norm Powell in that backcourt to now having to deal with Chris Paul and Devin Bridges in the next round. So this is going to be fascinating. I think there's an argument to be made that the Denver Nuggets yet again do have an advantage in the front court, right? With Nikola Jokic taking on DeAndre Ayton, Aaron Gordon, Michael Porter Jr. against the front court that the Phoenix Suns have. So it is going to be a fascinating series in that regard. And we're going to have a lot more on that. The series previews are coming up in the next day here on VSiN.com. We'll have a weekend podcast previewing all of the series at length. But let's really quickly talk about the two Eastern Conference series. And just to set the scene, really just to set the scene from a price perspective, because both of them really stuck out to me. And we're going to talk about this with Doug Kazarian of ESPN Daily Wager, host of the Behind the Bets podcast, coming up in a couple of minutes. But I will say, so I picked the Brooklyn Nets to win this series against the Milwaukee Bucks. But having said that, a lot of the price, I am surprised by a lot of the prices that were popping up. And yesterday when I was on the air with Danielle Avari and Wes Reynolds over on My Guys in the Desert, Circa had opened it up, or I don't know if they opened it, but there was a price as high as minus 235 on the Brooklyn Nets. So you were getting 2-1 coming back on the Milwaukee Bucks. And to me, like that's the buy price to me, right? To say the Bucks are only winning this series a third of the time and giving the Brooklyn Nets an implied probability, I think, of nearly like 66% to 70%, that's really high, in my opinion, given the matchups that are out there for both of these teams, right? You know, I've mentioned it before, tell them blue in the face, you know where I'm going in terms of the perimeter defense for the Milwaukee Bucks. There's no need to reiterate how bad it's been, especially in the regular season this past year, and how Brooklyn can take advantage of that. But the Bucks can still roll out a lineup that is going to be, I think, relatively effective from a defensive standpoint against the Brooklyn Nets, right? Just from a physical standpoint, as I've brought up this exercise many times when I'm talking about matchups between players, but like the draw a line between each guy defensively, like you have a guy for each player on Brooklyn that is part of the big three, right? Giannis versus KD, Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday versus James Harden and Kyrie Irving. Take your pick between them. I think Chris Middleton would be more effective against the James Harden type, mainly because Harden is, you know, top of the key type player. He's not going to be running around and getting free off screens. I think you need more mobility to be able to stay with Kyrie Irving off ball, and that sounds like a Drew Holiday type assignment. But regardless, they have like the physical matchups that would be able to bother them, right? Now, I think it's a really big loss for this team, and I say this in Milwaukee, that Dante DiVincenzo is going to be lost for the series, because that sucks, man. Dante DiVincenzo is a really solid player. He's obviously a solid scorer, right? He's part of one of the more effective lineups when he's on the floor. When he's out there, their defensive rating improves by 2.2 points every 100 possessions. One of their most used lineups, Milwaukee, is Drew Holiday, Dante DiVincenzo, Chris Middleton, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Brooke Lopez. It's the starting lineup. They're plus 10.7. They only give up 108.1 points per 100 possessions. The loss of DiVincenzo is going to be a pretty big one. And now when you're looking at who's going to take that shooting guard position, right, who's going to play that other guard spot, then you get into some tough spots, right? Pat Connaughton, Bryn Forbes, right? Like those are all like the options there for them are relatively tough from a defensive standpoint, because I think you are going to suffer in that regard. Especially if you put out Bryn Forbes, Harden's going to go after him almost every single time. So I think it's going to be really fascinating from that regard how this starting lineup is going to look for the Milwaukee Bucks and the loss of a Dante DiVincenzo, who's a really solid defender and who helps them with their team defense, and what that's going to mean. But all of that aside, I always hope that I've never come off as dismissive of the Milwaukee Bucks. I've just always thought that Brooklyn was going to win that series. I always thought this was going to be like a 7-game series. Like, this is a relatively tight competition between these two. And so, again, going back to a series price of over $2 for the Brooklyn Nets, it's pretty high. So my buy price is going to be 2-1. If I can get 2-1 again to pop up, I went to go bet it when I was on the show and Wes pointed it out to me. And the second I hit it, it went down to plus 180. So Sarka adjusted off of that pretty quickly. We'll see if that pops up yet again. But my buy price in there on Milwaukee is going to be 2-1. VSiN.com/JVT, by the way, and those series previews are going to be up as that series gets started on Saturday. And we'll have all of our second-round series previewed, too. So let's move on really quickly. Again, and this is – it's hard, I think, pre-flop to handicap this Hawks and 76ers series at this point right now, late Thursday night, early Friday, mainly because Joel Embiid's status just clouds the entire thing. Like, if you're telling me that Joel Embiid's playing, there's no way this is a $2 price tag. Minus 200 seems cheap on Philadelphia. I think there's a couple of $1.80s popping up out there. If I know I'm getting Joel Embiid at full strength, I thought this was going to be closer to like $4 or $5. So I think there is some very good value on Philadelphia if I know that I'm getting Joel Embiid, and I just have no idea if I am. And while Atlanta had a really good series against the New York Knicks, I wouldn't count out a Joel Embiid-less Philadelphia 76ers team against Atlanta. There's still some really good defensive pieces there along the perimeter without Joel Embiid. You have Defensive Player of the Year candidate in Ben Simmons. You have Matisse Thybulle. You have Danny Green. There's some solid pieces defensively on this squad. Now, and Tobias Harris isn't terrible either by any stretch. It'll be interesting to see where their offense comes from for the most part. Joel Embiid's such a massive piece of it. Their offense really falls off without him on the floor. But regardless, his status is this cloud that hangs over the series where I don't know why you would feel comfortable handicapping this series before it started. It was like the Lakers game yesterday. You know, a lot of people asking me like, hey, what's the play here on this Lakers game? It's like, watch. Watch and see who's going to play and who's not and then bet it in game. Because the second, I mean, like, look at, for example, right? I'm sure there were a lot of people who were like, AD playing? Hell yeah, I'm betting the Lakers in this thing. And then what happens? He gets out there, and one play in, he's grabbing at his groin because, of course, it's a groin injury. It's serious. That's hard to come back from in like 2 days. So even when you had Anthony Davis out there, he wasn't 100%. So I don't know why. Like, I, again, going back to this, it's the same thing, right? You could even tell, like, I even use the phrase, if I know I'm getting Joel Embiid, like, what status of health? What's the Street Fighter health bar look like? The Street Fighter health bar. What's it look like above his head? Because I know for damn sure the Street Fighter health bar above AD's head last night was orange and maybe even a little red. It was not looking good in terms of the groin. Yeah, that was tough. So anyway, so again, Embiid, health, obviously a massive piece for this series. The Atlanta Hawks are really good, and I was very impressed and got more impressed with them, and I have, you know, upgraded them a little bit in my own standing after watching what they did to the New York Knicks, because I thought that would be a six-game series, and they handled business in a massive way at home and then, of course, closing them out in New York. Hawks are a good young team. Nate McMillan's did a really good job. But Joel Embiid on the court makes things completely different for that squad. He can take Clint Capela out a little bit along the perimeter and in space. He's an elite mid-range finisher. He's a great body within 4 feet of the basket, which will make it extremely hard for Trey on those floaters and those pick and rolls. That Clint Capela-Trey Young pick and roll is not going to have the same effect that it did against the New York Knicks. Right? Ben Simmons can handle Bogdan Bogdanovic off the ball. Matisse Thybulle can match up with Trey Young on the ball. There's just so many little things that this team can really do. And that doesn't even mention Danny Green, who you can throw at Trae Young on a possession-to-possession basis, right? You don't mind switching that off at all. There's just so many things that this team can do from a lineup versatility standpoint on defense, the Philadelphia 76ers. It'll be a pretty fascinating series, I'll give it that. But if I knew I was getting a healthy Joel Embiid, $1.80, you bet your ass I'd be all over that. But it's the reason why it's so cheap. And we'll see. Maybe the market, right? The market gets overly impressed with teams in the first round, and you get cheap prices. I was told by somebody, I'll bet the Mavericks no matter what the price is in the next round. Like, well, that's not true. You know? If the Mavericks in the next round against Utah are minus 200, are you betting that? Because I'm willing to bet you're not. But, you know, you throw out those statements because you get so impressed with what is happening. And I think maybe, just maybe, we're seeing that with the betting market here up to this point. So that's the buy price so far. As of my recording this, haven't seen a series price up yet for the Suns and Nuggets. It'd be fascinating, too, if they get Will Barton back, because I like this Denver team, man. Nikola Jokic, that was a coming-out party in this series. Multiple 30-point games. The guy was absolutely tremendous. Looked a little gassed near the stretch. Jusuf Nurkic had some trouble with him. Portland Trailblazers got some big-picture questions to answer. Don't think C.J. McCollum is going to be back with that team. I'd rather have Norm Powell, and they went and got him. So, but regardless, let's talk with Doug Kazarian on the other side. We're going to chat a lot about what we have seen so far in this Clippers and Mavericks series. I nerd out over an NBA draft and get his thoughts on the two big boys in the Eastern Conference, Brooklyn Nets, Milwaukee Bucks, and how that series will go down. Hey, please, too, by the way, It's Hardwood Handicappers Podcast. Like, rate, review, subscribe. We need them.
This is the Hardwood Handicappers Podcast, only on the VSiN Podcast Network.
All right, let's welcome in Doug Kazarian, ESPN fame, Daily Wager host as well, Behind the Bets podcast too. Does a great job with all the sports betting content and part of ESPN Chalk crew. What's up, dude? How's the playoffs been for you?
Well, quite the intro. I appreciate the accolades. It's been fun. You know, I'm sure you can sympathize, but like my muscle memory is all thrown off. Memorial Day weekend, I'm used to conference finals. I'm used to maybe an NBA finals game, and you got full, you know, quadruple headers and stuff. So, but there's really nothing like the first round when you got NHL and NBA playoffs. And you got these just marathon days of all hoops. And I'm still pasty white in 100-degree weather because I got to watch all these games.
Yeah. And, oh, it sucked. I think Friday we only have one game, right? Like, when I saw that on the schedule, I was like, what the hell is that? Like, that's lame.
Yeah, it feels abrupt, right? When you go from all these games and then, like, obviously you have a couple sweeps, a couple gentlemen sweeps. And then you get like a game six or seven. You're like, what is going, what do I do? What on, do I actually have to go outside on a weekend?
So I was, before we get into all the serious stuff, I wanted to throw this at you because I got really excited about this earlier today, but nobody I talked to really cared about it. And so maybe I'm just geeking out over something like a partial observation here. So Luka Doncic has been absolutely incredible against the Clippers, right? And Trae Young's been very good in this series against the Knicks. And obviously we know about the connection between those two. And so I went back to the 2018 draft to look at just like everything that was happening around there. I had forgotten that DeAndre Ayton was the first pick in that draft. Right. He's been doing
Bagley
fantastic.
As well.
Bagley. And then if you look at like the depth of the 2018 draft, like we're talking about like Jalen Brunson, Dante DiVincenzo, Anfernee Simons, like there's a legitimately 20 guys that came out of this class that are contributing, like decent contributors for their teams respectively at this point. It's insane.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now, right? You got SGA, who's going to be fantastic once he doesn't have to sit because teams are tanking. But there's a lot of solid players. Yeah, DiVincenzo, Simons, I'm glad you mentioned him because I think he's might be like comeback player of the year next year or something. If he gets an opportunity, he's an outstanding shooter. He was also in the dunk contest. Yep. So who knows what his ceiling is, but he's a really nice piece. Is he a budding all-star? Probably not, but there's some solid guys, and to your point, Devontae Graham and some guys in the second round as I look at this, and even Gary Trent Jr., you know, hired a gun off the bench, solid player, of course.
So, by the way, Anfernee Simons, because you're right, I think, I can't remember what trade it was in the offseason, but he was rumored to have been off limits for the Trailblazers. They love this kid. So, right now, speaking of the Trailblazers, Doug and I are recording this on Thursday night, and this will be out early Friday, late Thursday, but we'll promote it, of course, early Friday. So regardless, you're listening to this after this Denver-Portland game with a minute left to go. So let's get to some of the big topics. We mentioned Doncic, so that's a natural jumping off point. This is a fascinating series. Like, outside of the betting angles, it's been fascinating to see this play out between the Mavericks and the Clippers. What has been your massive observation as the Clippers look to stave off elimination on Friday?
Well, from a betting perspective, it's the first quarter overs. Like, that's what's hitting. There's a ton of points. The only time it didn't was when Luka was hurt, right, and had that nerve issue. And obviously, you could just sympathize him and see him wincing. But that, like, I've been playing the first half totals. This series, more than any others, you've seen it skewed first half much more than just half the game total, right? It's certainly skewed that way. And then I think it's obviously Terry Stotts making the right adjustments. Give Ty Lue credit for the game three adjustment. But I think Stotts moving chess pieces around, which is, excuse me, not Stotts, Rick Carlisle. Which is nothing new. Obviously, we know of his capabilities. Won a ring in 2011 with the one blemish, really, on LeBron's resume. But I think it's just that Luka is like, could be like the face of the NBA, right? In a couple of years, maybe Steph starts to decline a little bit. And you just see this guy who is really like a presence on the court and an impact on the court that we haven't seen really since LeBron. And I think he's kind of like the next LeBron in that regard. Obviously, Giannis can do that a little bit, but just the way Luka sees it, and he's brilliant, and all this stuff where he's like three steps ahead of everyone that LeBron is, I think we see that with Luka now, And I think that's like the passing of the torch, if you will. If you can carry, I don't want to say scrubs like LeBron did, some of the like the 07 Cavs team, but if he can carry a team like this to the next round and dethrone a Clippers squad, I think that that's a giant feather in his cap, one of many throughout the, that are coming in this career.
Yeah, 81% of those buckets yesterday, right, scored or assisted on. Like, it's insane what he's been able to do in this series. And, like, I was talking about this the other day. Sometimes you're just watching greatness unfold, right? Like, we can talk about all the numbers and the shooting and the unsustainability, but sometimes you're just playing a damn good player, a next-level guy like a LeBron or a Luka, and that's, sometimes that's the difference, right, over a team that's been kind of put together, doesn't have much chemistry, and has had the issues that the Clippers have had.
Yeah, I mean, look, it became a big three, right? But old days, it was a big two, right? Like Pippen. I mean, obviously, they had the triumvirate of Grant, Rodman. You know, that was always that third leg. But, I mean, look, Lakers won with a big two, and then Rondo played great. He was almost like a big three, at least for a few games in the finals. But Luka's like a big one, and it's just a lot to ask for him to do that. And what you said, you know, assist on 31 of 37 buckets, or excuse me, score or assist. So it's just pretty insane to see him do it. There is a ceiling to it, and if he does it, that things look great for the Jazz in the West, at least. So I just think, you know, you got to get Luka some help. I don't know if Porzingis is the answer. Porzingis has played well at times, but Luka is just incredible.
So Clippers favorite tomorrow. Again, we're recording this on Thursday. 3-point favorite. I'll just ask you simply, you think Clippers can still win this thing?
They can. I don't think they will. When it was 2-1, it was minus 120 Dallas, and I posted this on ESPN.com. I bet the Mavs, because obviously if they go up 3-1, then you like their chances. I said, even at 2-2, we've seen from a lot of these teams how hard it is to win three straight playoff games, right? We saw Denver lay an egg in game four. We saw the Lakers lay an egg in game four. It is tough to win three straight games and play well and see what it – I mean, even the Celtics lost, or even the Nets lost. So – I just think I thought game five, the, you know, there's confidence on the Mavs sideline, and I thought they could go to LA and win, which they did. So the question is, can they get this? Can we finally see a home team win? I like the Mavs in the series. Now they're up 3-2. They have a chance to win at home, but I even like their chances going to LA. I do.
Yeah. Well, you have to, especially with the way we watch this. This has been absolutely nuts. All right. Last one on this before we move on from this series, because I really want to get your opinion before we get you out of here on the two Eastern Conference ones that have been set. My thinking on this has been Ty Lue actually made an adjustment. He made it too late, but he made the adjustment to go to Nick Batum, right? Especially play a little bit more five, and he started him in game four, and it worked out for him. And then yesterday in game five, Carlisle goes, okay, well, I'll one-up you. I'm going to play zone with Boban Marjanovic in the middle, and that really worked out very well. My worry for the Clippers, on top of everything we talked about, is I feel like Ty Lue used the bullet in the gun that he had, and now he's like, I don't know what else to do now. I've made my move, and now I've been stumped.
Well, adjustments are only part of it, right? Yeah. There's always, it's a lot of games with a lot of possessions, right? So the adjustments, it starts. But I really think, and a lot of this is narrative betting, and I'm as guilty of it as anyone, there is narrative component to this. Like, a team down 0-2 plays with more desperation, plays with more physicality, and thus draws more whistles, right? It's not that the refs are you know, extending the series, but if you have more bounce in your step, like look at the Nuggets off that beatdown when Malone called them out, Porter promised that they would have more energy and all that, and they were up 20 points in the first period or whatever it was.
Yep.
So I just think that the Clippers, having done that in games 3 and 4, relaxed a little bit. You saw it with their just demeanor, and then they were doing fine, and then Paul George gets in foul trouble, and then all of a sudden, Luka starts going off. But the Clippers made their move. They were down 14, cut it to 1, and then Kawhi passes to Terrence Mann. So it's adjustments, but then it's also like the fire, if you will, of some of these guys who are facing elimination. So I think the Clippers will play hard. But I think they're a little disjointed. Like, sometimes Rondo plays crunch time. Sometimes he doesn't. They get a little lackadaisical because I don't think they have a true pecking order and a fluidity to their offense. They almost don't have too many guys, and they don't – when it's humming, it's great. Like, the ball's moving, it's popping, three balls, it's great. Rondo's driving, either dishing or doing the fake behind-the-back pass layup. But when it's not working, there's a little sort of disjointed play that just kind of gets everyone a little out of sync and off kilter, and guys like Morris and even Batum kind of don't know what to do because it's it's like oil and water a little bit when Kawhi and Paul George are on the perimeter and no one's attacking.
Yeah. All right. Well, before we move on to the Eastern Conference, I should note that as we are talking, the Portland Trailblazers have been eliminated by the Denver Nuggets. Good series win for the Nuggets. They move on, take out Portland. Where were you at on that series before it started?
So it was looks like the only pre-playoffs bet I lost. I was on not Denver. I was on Portland. I was on the Nets minus 2.5 games. I had a couple other plays that looked pretty good. But today I took the plus 5, and I took the – we had a dog of the day money line, and I took Denver here. It's funny. You know, my whole spiel was like, I can't tell you how much money I've lost over the years when it's like 2-2, team game 5 winner, and then they're going to game 6. I'm like, all right, that team's going to respond, and we're going to go to game 7. And, like, I was like, I can't tell you how many times the dog just wins. And I was like – and so we actually looked it up, and it's like an outrageous ATS. The road team in game 6 with a 3-2 lead, like, covers like 65-70% of the time. It's insane. And a lot of times they win outright because you get them on the brink, right? You're now one win away, and you just, like, go for it in the second half. And that's what Denver did tonight, right? They had that sort of – and then obviously the team that's losing starts to doubt a little bit. And, look, or they just play better and they're the better team. But I kind of sniffed it out having gotten beaten my brains down in all these years.
Yep. All right. So Portland goes home. Denver moves on. And then they, of course, will await the winner of Lakers and Suns whenever that, of course, wraps up. And that is coming on later today.
This is the Hardwood Handicappers Podcast. Interact with the show on Twitter at me, JVT, at Roach underscore 97, and at VSIN Live.
All right, the two Eastern Conference series we have set. We will save the big one for last. Atlanta Hawks and Philadelphia 76ers. Sixers like a $2 favorite. We don't know what Joel Embiid is going to be in this series at all, but I was still kind of surprised by just $2. Like, this is a regular season matchup that Philly beat the crap out of Atlanta. And you can go back, right, and you can talk, like, Trae Young missed one game, but Ben Simmons missed another. Like, there were some pretty big gaps between these two teams in the regular season. I was surprised by the $2, but I understand Embiid's presence. So it has kept me off of this before the series has started. What is your read?
It's hard to pull the trigger not knowing the Embiid status. And I don't want to be Debbie Downer. Everyone wants to fire. But here's my thing.
Where's the value, Doug?
Full disclosure, JVT. I bet Trae Young 100-1 to win the MVP this year because I read a bunch about the Hawks, how they were going all in on analytics. I love their moves surrounding him with shooters and seeing what's coming out in the playoffs. Like, I feel like I should get my money back at least, right? Like, I made a decent play here, and surrounding him with shooters, that's exactly what you need. And all these guys were hurt. Like, Gallo missed so much time. Bogey missed so much time. And now that they're at full strength, they even have their guys defensively, like Hunter. Like, they're a solid team, man. And a lot of these teams in the postseason aren't really indicative of what their seed is, right? Like, Denver, having lost Jamal Murray, isn't a true three seed. But I also think they're getting a little underrated here. And Portland, like, they're not a true six seed. Nurk and McCollum miss so much time. So I think the Hawks, you know, being a five seed, I think it's a little misleading given their firepower, their coaching change. They're, what are they, 21-2 at home since the All-Star break and 18-4 ATS. So they're just a different team. They're now much more complete. Capella is really fitting along nicely. Aside from the stupid three-pointers in games 3 or 4, Trae Young is playing within himself. He's not doing the Steph Curry shooting. He's more attacking and then floater game, or he's doing the lob work. It was the step back. They had such a problem the first 2 months or so of the season. They were, I think, the worst fourth quarter point differential team in the NBA is because Trae Young was trying to pull Curry moves out of his hat instead of just doing what he's best at. He's an excellent passer, has great vision. He's not a logo shooter yet. He can make it, but doesn't mean he should be doing that. And he finally learned, and then they became a much better team in the fourth quarter and closing out games. And then, again, everyone's just healthier, and Nate McMillan's pulling all the strings. And so they've been that much better since the coaching change. So I don't want to dismiss them and kind of just use regular season stats, and then you have the Embiid thing. But I also, with that whole all being said, like, I think people are dismissing the Sixers and also the Bucks, but I think they learned that in the first round, that what happened the previous years does not apply. What happened with the Brett Brown Sixers and the other regime, it just doesn't apply. Like, Daryl Morey found all the right pieces Embiid has been great this year as an MVP finalist. Simmons is outstanding as a slasher and on the fast break, and he can guard all five positions, and they have shooters. So there's just so much to like with both teams. I think it does feel a little cheap at $2, but I don't know if they're, you know, being a little coy about the injury with Embiid. You know, how fragile is he going to be when he comes back? I mean, partial tear. I mean, I always think that sounds pretty serious.
Why did the market, and this is not meant at a slight at your colleagues, Doug, but we were talking about this today. Like, was it 15 of 17 at ESPN or whatever it was, picked the Knicks? Like, we had a lot of support behind New York in that series. I didn't really understand it. Is that the East Coast bias? Like, I feel like everybody fell in love with them and didn't realize that they were the 24th best offense in the league and that it was going to be kind of hard to keep up with this Hawks team. All I heard was grit and nothing else.
Yeah, you were ahead of this. You were on an island for the most part, because I was all about – not all about it. I just said I can't pick a winner. I wasn't sure the Hawks could get it all together, but I think some of it could be buyer's remorse a little bit. And trying to undo a wrong when so many people were, at the beginning of the season said the Knicks will be one of the worst teams.
Yeah.
And so maybe it was a chance to kind of make up and get some goodwill back. I don't know. And then also the Knicks, like, look, typically refs swallow the whistle. You get, all this that stuff. I thought maybe the Knicks were sort of built for the postseason. But did you expect Randle to lay this kind of an egg?
I didn't. No.
So, I mean, look, Derrick Rose was the best player on the Knicks in this postseason. And they just didn't make the shots. But, I mean, obviously they could have won game one, and they could have played better in a couple of the home. The offense just disappeared.
All right, so let's go to the other team in New York. Maybe the team, the Brooklyn Nets. So the price that stuck out to me on this series, circa initially yesterday, was as high as minus 235, if I remember correctly, on Brooklyn. And you were getting 2-1 on Milwaukee. I think Brooklyn wins this series, but I think this has like seven game, like kind of slobber knocker written all over it. This looks like it's going to be great. But, Milwaukee's really good. And I feel like if I'm getting 2-1, it's going to be hard to pass up on Milwaukee, even though I believe that the Nets are going to win this series. I thought we were talking about like $1.50 between these two teams, maybe $1.65. So I'm really interested to see the respect here for Brooklyn in a series like this. What do you look at?
So when you bet these series, and I think look no further than what we saw with the Lakers, right? The series was just bananas with the series price going up and down, left and right. I think the important thing is to remember how much the money line changes. And so you almost want to handicap a game before you handicap the series. Like game one, who do you like? And I know that's silly. If you have no opinion, that's fine too. But you have to think like this. Because what's going to happen is the series price is going to change so much. When you're thinking about 20 cents here and there, that's a big swing when you're factoring in, when you're trying to think, 20 cents here and there on a series price, the game one's going to swing it a lot more than that. And so there's just so much to assess. So for me, I think the Nets are going to get maybe worn down in the series. So like, I like the Nets early in the series. So I would probably take the Nets in the series early. I'm just worried about their bigs. I think Giannis can eat them alive. And is Jeff Green healthy? I mean, where are we on that? Because I don't want Claxton playing at all if I'm a Nets backer.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating, man. I cannot wait. That's I shouldn't say. If Embiid's hurt, that is the de facto Eastern Conference Finals and could be potentially de facto NBA Finals, given all the injuries and the madness going on in the Western Conference.
Well, let me ask you this. I was talking about it in my own podcast, and then sure enough, some books started putting it up, and I was very grateful because, in the Super Bowl, we see it a lot, AFC, NFC, sometimes like a 2.5-point spread or whatever. Mm-hmm. The East is right now, I think, $1.40. Who would you fire on if the Eastern Conference versus Western Conference?
$1.40 seems cheap given everything.
I think there's no doubt in my mind the East is winning.
Right. Okay. Yeah. $1.40 like, seems relatively big. Cheap.
Yeah. Because right now it's like totally opened up for the East, right? Like right? You have Utah, obviously, is a threat and deserves to be so. But besides that, the Clippers could get their act together. I just don't anticipate it happening. And, I just don't want to have to pick between all those three teams in the East. But if the Nets or Bucks get there, they're going to be so tough. Like, I mean, if the Nets get there, then they will have proven themselves against the Bucks, which will be just enormously impressive.
Yeah. No, it's so really interesting.
I like the East in sort of an advanced series price. Yeah. Because, no. I mean, we talked the Hawks. Obviously, the Hawks could get there. I just don't see it happen.
Right. I think Eastern Conference Finals is probably the ceiling for Atlanta. And that's if Embiid doesn't play the entire series. And that's still going to be a tough matchup for him. All right, Doug. Well, your Lakers are about to start playing here for their lives against Phoenix. Last, before we get you out of here, anything else you want to leave us with?
I like the West Jazz at plus 175. Now, I bet them in January at 7-1 and 12-1.
Hey, me and you too, huh? Yeah, I got them at 7-1.
Well, that's the nice thing about writing stories. Sometimes you get sold. Like, I did all this, like a feature piece for ESPN.com betting chalk section and wrote all about it. And I was like, they haven't won more than a series in like a decade and all this stuff. But I was like, look, they're going to hold on to the one seed. I was a believer, at least in the regular season. So I'm like, 7-1 is legit, 12-1. We missed the really good prices, right? And then I was just like, and then obviously everything's just opened up for them. Like the Lakers injuries, Clippers lack of mental toughness, whatever you want to say. So if you have the Lakers and the Clippers eliminated the first round, I think Phoenix is legit, right? So, but I mean, you have to like your position. So I think plus 175 on the Jazz, who we kind of forgot how good Donovan Mitchell is, right? Like, did we forget he missed around 20 games? And he's just a difference maker. And the Jazz held on to the one seed down the stretch, and they were still resting guys. A lot of times they had Conley out and obviously still Mitchell out. So they had a really impressive run when you factor all that in. This team's legit top five in both offensive and defensive efficiency. Only team in the NBA that can do that. I've been really impressed with Utah, and Quinn Snyder's an excellent coach. I think plus 175 is value.
And, you know, what's surprising is just the market's view on them, right? Like the power rating never really budged in the series throughout, right, against Memphis. The lines never really changed, even though you usually see a little bit of an adjustment off of some results, right? You know, Clippers go from 6 to 7, all that kind of stuff. And the power rating was pretty static. But also, you know, they covered all four, and they won four straight the second Mitchell came back. It was a pretty bad mismatch for Memphis.
Well, and it's what the whole thing that's making it so fascinating, JVT, is the fact that like the futures liability is incorporated in this. And I said that it was bananas between the Suns and Lakers, but just think about it. You have the 7 seed, which has the most liability, or the second most liability of all the teams for the books, right, in the championship futures market in the West. And then you have a series price move from $3 to whatever it moved to, $2, before a first game was even played. And then between games 1 and 2, the Lakers go from a closing number of about 2.5 as a dog, and then to a 2-point favorite, or give or take a half point, and nothing else changed. There's no injuries. There's no venue change. And then you have the series price goes to a pick 'em after the Lakers bounce back in game 2. They win game 3. CP3's hurt. It gets to $9. And then they lose as a 6.5-point favorite, not a 12.5-point favorite like the Nets were. 6.5-point favorite, and then they're all of a sudden underdogs after game 4. And so it's just crazy because of the, you know, obviously the injuries played a huge role, but the liability. So you have the Clippers and Lakers, which represent the most liability out West. And then, so that's why the Jazz futures have been so enticing, because they're the one seed that's dismissed. And then the Lakers and Clippers here could be exit in the first round. And so the books are finally adjusting. So actually, what was it? Yesterday was the first time all year that the Lakers were not the favorite in the West. In fact, it was the first time since like the Golden State Durant days that the Clippers or Lakers were not the favorite out West. So it's just kind of funny that these two teams could get bounced the first round, and what else it means for the rest of the betting market.
Yeah, it's a good point. Doug Kazarian, again, ESPN Daily Wager, Behind the Bets podcast, all that stuff. ESPN Chalk does a great job there, too. What's the schedule for Daily Wager?
So we're weekdays, 6 Eastern-ish on ESPN2. Sometimes we have to go early. It's all like programming, right? So
yeah,
COVID bounced around a lot of games. And so sometimes there's just like during the playoffs, like we had no shows on Fridays with these like quadruple headers and all that. So anyways, we're 6 Eastern ESPN2 Monday through Friday. We have a Daily Wager podcast in the mornings that posts around noon Eastern. And then obviously I have the Behind the Bets pod. And so a lot of fun content. Like you said, we're doing a daily picks on Chalk. So there's a lot of good content on ESPN Chalk as well.
Appreciate the time, Doug. Thank you.
You got it. Always good to talk hoops with you, JVT.
Yep. Catch up soon, man.